All right, we'll let the musicians go down at this time, unless they're participating in some special music here tonight, while you're turning in your Bibles to the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 15. All right, out of respect for the Word of God, let's stand together as I begin reading with verse 32. Then Jesus called his disciples unto him and said, I have compassion on the multitude, because they continue with me now 3 days, and I have nothing to eat, and I will not send them away fasting, lest they faint in the way. And his disciples say unto him, Whence should we have so much bread in the wilderness as to fill so great a multitude? And Jesus said unto them, How many loaves have ye? And they said, 7 and a few little fishes. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves and the fishes and gave thanks and broke them and gave to his disciples and the disciples to the multitude.
Next Sunday is, of course, Missions Commitment Sunday, and I'm looking forward to our special guest speaker for the day and personally praying about what God would have me to give towards missions and other areas of stewardship. But I also have something to say about missions, and I want to speak on that tonight, and hopefully it'll be a challenge for us to think throughout the week, and then Brother Smith will preach next Sunday, and we'll let God work. But missions is the life of the church and the lifeline to the world. It's good for us to remember here at Lighthouse Baptist Church that our church is a product of missions giving. But there was a time when we were a mission church out of another church, that there was a time when Lighthouse Baptist Church did not exist, and that we were sent here, and that there were several churches early on that supported us financially. I think that when we came here, we had about $1,000 a month coming in support, which was not enough to go full-time or do very much, but allowed us to get started. And then later, other churches began supporting us as well, and sometimes churches gave large sums of money. A couple of churches gave $5,000 and such. This is before there wasn't the big church planting push like we've seen in more recent years, and it was harder to get church planting money at the time, but some were getting more involved in it. And so our church was started because churches gave towards missions, and hardworking people sitting in their churches, serving in their churches, gave their faith promise missions that could then be divided up among missionaries and helping churches like ours get started. And one reason we support new churches, especially in the United States, and we support church planters, is because they're a great way to get a manifold return on our investment. For example, we had a visitor here Wednesday night from a church in Alvarado. And there was a time when we supported Brother Davis when he was had taken over at Central Baptist Church, and it was down to nothing, and we helped support them. And this week was their missions conference. So we helped that church get on its feet. And now that, we give a couple $1,000s, and now that church is giving tens of thousands of dollars towards world missions. Same could be said for Victory Baptist Church in Sanger. We were one of only 4 churches that supported that Brother Graff, when he was there, we supported the church planter before him as well. And we give a couple $1,000s, and they send tens of thousands of dollars to missions. And so church planting is a great investment that gives a manifold return towards missions. A while back, I was sitting with one of our original supporting pastors, and he said, well, y'all were a good investment. Your church was a good investment. And that was a good word of praise. But it's good to see what God does. But we have to have a heart for missions, because we owe missions. We owe the Lord for what other churches have invested in us. And because we have a Savior that has commanded us to be involved in this work of worldwide missions. Tonight I want you to consider the familiar story of the feeding of the 4,000 under this title, A Model Missions Process. A model missions process, and we're going to follow this process from a compassionate Savior to a satisfied multitude. Now, we've read in verses 29 through 31, but notice again verse 29. And Jesus departed from thence and came nigh to the Sea of Galilee, and went up into a mountain and sat down there. And great multitudes came unto him, having with them those that were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, and many others, and cast them down at Jesus' feet and healed them, insomuch that the multitude wondered when they saw the dumb to speak and the maimed to be whole, the lame to walk and the blind to see, and they glorified the God of Israel. Now imagine this crowd. This is not your typical Sunday morning crowd. This is not your dressed up in your suits and ties, wearing your nice dresses, wearing your shoes, you hope it don't get muddy, walking across the parking lot. This is a crowd of people that are blind, they cannot speak, they are demon-possessed, they are deaf, they have been maimed, they cannot walk. These are the sick, the outcast, the uncared for, the folks who have no hope, and some desperate friends or family have brought them up to a mountain to get them in touch with Jesus Christ in hopes that He will heal them and make them whole. And that's what Jesus did. And Jesus healed them all. And the lame were walking, the maimed were made whole, the dumb could speak, and the blind could see, and the crowd was amazed, and they glorified God for what they saw Jesus doing. And then in verse 32, then Jesus called His disciples unto Him and said, I have compassion on the multitude. You see, missions is all about the compassion of Christ for the hungry multitude. He was concerned about their need. He was moved with compassion, and He sought to enlist His disciples in meeting the need, the immediate need of this crowd that had come to Him. In verses 29, 30, and 31, it's all Christ. No one else could do these miracles. Only Christ can do the work that is done in those three verses. Only He could heal. Only He could give sight to the blind. He could make the dumb speak. But in the next set of verses, anyone can pass out bread. Y'all with me tonight? Anyone can pass out bread. There are some things only Jesus can do. Only Jesus can save the soul. Only Jesus can change the life. Only Jesus can transform a family. But any of us can pass out bread. You see. And so the compassion of Christ, caring about the needs of the multitude, He's enlisting people not to do what only He can do, but to do what we can do in carrying the gospel and getting the bread of life to those who need it. Jesus wants to involve the church. He wants us to be involved in His work of world missions. We can't just sit here and expect Christ to do it all without us. He needs someone that can carry bread to the multitude. By the way, missions is the church getting involved, but just being part of a missions church does not mean that you're involved. I think a lot of folks are very happy to be in a church that has 42 missionaries, and I just bought a new bulletin board to put on the other wall so we can increase to 50, which is our goal. Amen? What's the point of having a goal if you don't think you're even going to fill up the one that you have? And so we bought a new bulletin board, ready to put up new missionary letters, and some Christians are very content to be part of a missions-minded church and say, look at all of our missionaries, but they never give a dollar towards world missions. But folks, all of us should be involved, not just in being in the church and sitting in a church and listening to missionaries and hearing the reports read, but actually being involved by supporting the missionaries that we support. Christ wants us to be involved in this process of feeding the bread of life to the multitudes. But notice verse 33, this is the attitude that many Christians have. His disciples saying to Him, whence should we have so much bread in the wilderness as to feed so great a multitude? Now, I'm not even going to go back. They'd already seen Christ feed 5,000. We've already seen, you know, as I said this morning, I often don't understand people. And I don't understand why they're so concerned about this when they've already seen Jesus do the same miracle at another time. But it just shows us that our lack of faith is like putting blind. We don't even see the obvious thing that Jesus can do. We're not willing to live by faith. And so they have the attitude, well, the need is too great and the supplies are too few. And many churches today, well, what's the point? There's 7 billion people on the earth and you know, what can we do as independent Baptists? What can our church do? We have 100 people here on a good Sunday. What can we do to make a difference
in that. I'd rather put my money towards something that I can enjoy in my own life. Why should I even be involved? And that attitude of why should we even bother even trying is what defeats world missions. It defeats the church, and the church will begin to wither and die and cease to exist because we no longer are living by faith, and we no longer can see what Christ could do if we would just give to Him and let Him work. The model, a model missionary process. Notice the verse is going to break itself down. Verse number 34 says, Jesus saith unto them, how many loaves have ye? And they said, seven and a few little fishes. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, very organized. And he took, now here in verse number 36, we're going to break this verse down. I'm going to show you the model process. First, Jesus took. Now, this was not the feeding of the 5,000. This is the feeding of the 4,000. We know where Jesus got His loaves and fishes at the feeding of the 5,000. He got them from the little lad who tugged on Andrew's jacket and said, here's my Spider-Man lunchbox or my Darth Vader lunchbox. And inside his little lunchbox, he had five little loaves his mom had packed for him because he's going out on it to see Jesus. And a couple little sardine fish, and he gave his little lunch, little lad's little lunch, fed 5,000. This is the feeding of the 4,000. We don't know where the bread came from. But somebody had to give up their bread. Seven loaves, a few little fishes, still not enough for 4,000 unless Jesus does something with it. We don't know who gave this lunch or who gave this food. We just know that the disciples said, what do we have? We got this, or here's what we have. And somebody had to give it to Jesus. None of this will take place. It all begins with someone giving and Jesus taking what has been given. Many Christians are simply not willing to give up their lunch. How much money could you give to missions if you gave up your lunch twice a week? That's more than some Christians give to missions. And to even give up their lunch and give up anything to help feed the multitude. But somebody is going to have to give. Someone's going to have to give their lunch. Someone's going to have to give it all. What's the point of raising missionary money if we never have anyone surrendering to the mission field and willing to go and take the gospel? Some are going to be called to give it all. Some of us are going to be called to give our lunch. But someone has to give. By the way, the church is God's recruiting station for missions and His work. The kids in public school, they're not going to go down for career counseling, and the career counselor is going to say, you know what, I really sense that you are gifted for the ministry. Have you considered going to the mission field? You don't drive by a strip mall where it says recruiting station, Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, ministry. The only place that God gets His ministers is out of the churches. And if we're not emphasizing that, and says, well, you know, we've just emphasized too much. Well, it's not emphasized too much because we hardly have anyone surrendering to the ministry. How can we say that it's emphasized too much when our Bible colleges are shriveling up? We're not seeing young people surrender. We're not seeing young people go. And even many that are in Bible college have no intention of living full time in service. The fact is we have less missionaries than we had back in the 1950s. We have less young people surrendering than we had back in the 1960s. We are at a low point in church planting, at a low point in pastoring. Not only are we not seeing churches started, there are thousands of churches that have no pastor, and they're calling everyone trying to find one. Much less the mission fields, which are mostly unreached by anyone. Of course the church should be calling, and the call should go to all of our young folks. That doesn't mean they're going to be called, but I guarantee you, well, are we just so concerned that our kids are accidentally going to be called to the mission field? I can tell you that doesn't happen enough for us to be concerned about it. We need to have that call, and some need to be encouraged to give and to give their lunch, and some need to give their lives. But the church is God's institution, not only for raising funds for world missions, but raising the faculty of world missions. We're not seeing the missions we used to see. When I was surrendered to preach, you were encouraged. You're either going to be a pastor, you're going to be a missionary. Now everyone has a niche ministry. Well, I'm just going to serve in this little niche, or I'm just going to serve in that. And half the young people said they're going to be youth pastors, like we need more youth pastors. Well, we need more pastors and more missionaries and more men who are willing to lead and take control and go someplace and start churches and build up ministries and go to the field and start multiple churches. But we have to have some who are willing to say, I don't have much, but here's my lunch and take it all. Where are we going to find those except in the churches? Where are we going to find those except in our Sunday schools? Where are we going to find those except on Sunday night and Wednesday night? And the folks who are serious about being in attendance at God's house. It was given, and if nothing had been given, nothing else would have been said in this passage. It all started with someone saying, here's what I have. I'm going to give it to Jesus. I want you to notice that Jesus took what was given. You notice that? He'll take what's given to him. They gave him, it didn't matter that it was little. He knew that it would be enough. On Easter Sunday, we're going to have a missionary in, Brother Johnny Leslie. He's about this tall. He was a drunk before he got saved. Got saved. I don't even think he had a high school. I don't even think he had a high school diploma. I may be wrong, but I don't think he had a high school diploma when he went to Bible college. And yet he is gone, and he is one of the best missionaries in all of Europe today, and has one of the most interesting ministries in all of Europe. He gave what little that he had, and God has used it on the mission field. And he'll be with us on Easter Sunday night. So those who skip Sunday night because it's a holiday, you're going to miss out on a veteran missionary. I'm a little riled up tonight. I'll tell you something. We have got to start giving back and giving to the Lord. Even if it's a little, you'd be amazed what God can do with it. But someone has to first be willing to give and put it in Jesus' hands before he can do anything else. Secondly, we find that Jesus thanked. He took, then he thanked. Verse 36, again, gave thanks. And who did he give thanks to? The Father. What I give to God, where does it come from? God. God gives to me so that I can give back to Him. Who gave me life? So when I give my life, I'm really just giving back to Him what He's already given to me. And so when Jesus took these few loaves and fishes, He gave thanks to the Father, because the Father is the one who gave that gift for that whoever gave it to give back to the Lord. But what I like about this thought is that when whoever gave that heard Jesus take the bread and say, Father, I give thanks, or whatever He said in that regard, Father, thank You for... They heard Jesus express gratitude for what had been given. To me, that's a heart-touching thought. That when I give to missions or when I give to the Lord's work, not that He's grateful to me. It just means a lot to me that He's grateful for what is given. That He gives thanks for what is given. That's why in Philippians, our offering, the missionary offering that was sent to Paul was referred to as the offering of a sweet savor. That it just smelled good to the Lord. He was thankful for it. And that's part of the process, that Jesus is thankful for what is given. And then thirdly, Jesus break. It says He break them. Now, if you have 7 loaves, a few fishes, and 4,000 men, not counting women and children, that is one of the first things you're going to have to do. You're going to have to start dividing it up and breaking it down. The miracle was that as He broke it and gave it away, it kept multiplying so that He never ran out. It just kept multiplying in His hands. As the disciples kept distributing it, He kept breaking it, and never ran out. Much like the cruse of oil didn't run out in Elijah's time, this bread didn't run out in His hands, you see. That was the miracle. But He break it. And sometimes we have to be broken before God can really use us. When J. Frank Norris was baptized as a boy, the pastor said, as he was putting him under the water in a muddy little creek, he said, Lord, take him, break him, and make him. Dr. Norris used to say that he liked the taking and he liked the making, but he never did like the breaking. But God has to break sometimes before He can use. He has to sometimes break down. That doesn't mean there necessarily has to be some great tragedy in your life. God has many ways to humble us. God can put Moses on the backside of the desert till he's so humble he doesn't even think he can do anything. And then God can use him. But there will be a breaking down before God does something. God has many ways of humbling us. But let's think of this in missions terms. When we take up missions offerings, what do we do with it? We take it, it's to the Lord.
It is one offering that is given and is broken up and distributed among our missionaries so that they can then take it and distribute it on their fields. You see how that works? We don't just take it up and say, all right, we're going to give all this to one person today. No, we take it, we break it, we divide it 42 or 43 different ways, and it's sent out, and then it helps them as they serve in their various mission fields. So the bread is broken, it's blessed, and it's distributed. But at first, it has to be broken down. It's not doing any good to sit in a lump sum in a bank account. And there are churches that are sitting on hundreds of thousands of dollars in money given to missions. What's the point of that? What is the point of a church having $200,000 in their missions account that has been raised to missions, but it has been sitting there accumulating interest, but it has never been broken down and given out? That's not why I give to missions. I want it to go to somebody. And I think it's a shame that churches, they accumulate all the, but they're so stingy in giving it out to where it needs to go. So Jesus took, Jesus thanked, Jesus break, and then Jesus gave to His disciples and the disciples to the multitude. Verse 36 again. Gave to His disciples and the disciples to the multitude. It has been given, it's been thanked for, it has been broken, and now it's time to give it out. Notice that Jesus did not rain bread from heaven like He rained manna during the 40 years in the wilderness. This is going to take some effort to get the bread to the people. It's the disciples, as though they're tired, they're weary, they have to take the bread and they have to distribute it. And folks, that's work. Now you break this down, 4,000 men. We don't have any idea on how many women or children might have been there. Just think of 4,000 divided between 12 apostles. That's 333.333 people per apostle. I've known some of those 0.3333 people. I mean, we've done banquets here. You serve 50 people and it's a lot of work, right? You have anything that has 100 people, it's a lot of work. You try to divide that where each of you has 333 people to take care of and someone's going to have 334. That's a lot of work. Back and forth, back and forth. They don't have serving carts. They have to take it and carry it and pass it around. And not just until everyone got a piece, until everyone was filled. Folks, that's a ton of work. Let me tell you something tonight. Missions work, God's work is work. It is a ton of work. It's work here, it's work there, it's work everywhere. There's no easy way to do missions work. There's no easy way to do God's work. It is a lot of work. It's called the work of the ministry, not the vacation of the ministry. It is a lot of work that is mundane. It is about as mundane as taking a piece of bread to this guy down here on the bottom of the hill and giving him his piece of bread and marching all the way back so I can get another piece of bread to take it back to somebody else. That is mundane and boring. I would think it's boring. Maybe you think it'd be the most exciting thing in the world. By the 222nd, you wouldn't think so. I'm saying that a lot of missions work, it's mundane, it's boring, it's difficult. You got people, you got problems, you got people problems, you got problem people. We get our missionary letters, and they try to give us highlights of every 2 months, but I tell you, for every highlight, there's just day after day after day of mundane work and just trying and making an effort and scraping the surface and just so they can scrape and just to send back a report to say that there was something happened here or something. But behind all that is tons of work and effort, much of which would be too boring to put in a prayer letter. That's real work. It's missions work. Now, what if we don't take it to the people? What if we just take it to some? That's defeating with the Lord's purpose. Let me illustrate. I have here a loaf of bread. Twisty tie off. By the way, in our home we have a debate. Does this really have to go back on here? I mean, if I just take this and I spin it like that and put it, doesn't that accomplish the same purpose? Isn't it just as tied? How many of you think yes it is? All the men raise their hand. How many of you think it's not? All the women raise their hand. That is the same thing. to go back and put this thing on there. What good does that do? Nothing. I don't even need that anymore. Done with it. Now, I want to ask, how many of y'all would like some bread? All right. All of you in the back, raise your hand even if you don't want some. Y'all want some bread? All right. I'm going to give out bread tonight. Okay? I'll give you some bread. I'll give you some bread. I'll give you some bread. Who else wants some bread? Y'all want some bread? Okay, I'm going to give you some bread. And I'm going to give you some bread. And I'm going to give you some bread. Who else wants some bread? All y'all back there? I'm going to give you some bread. I'm going to give you some bread. And I'm going to give you some bread. Who else? All right, I'm going to give y'all some bread. You see, that's how a lot of our attitude is towards missions. The whole world out there says, we'd want some bread. And you know what we do with it? We give it to each other. To those who are closest to us. Those who already have. He's got now 3 pieces of bread. He's got 2. He's got 2. She has 1. Y'all have none. So we live in a country where there's churches everywhere and we take it for granted. We have all the bread we want. We don't even hardly eat half of what we have. And there's multitudes out there that aren't getting any because it would take more work for me to walk back there and deliver you bread when it's so much easier just to pass it out to those who are closest, you see. And that's how we've done too much of our work in America. And we are so intent on taking our money and building the biggest, most magnificent facilities while the nations out there are still starving because we're just giving, aren't taking all of our bread and using it for ourselves, giving it to ourselves, passing it to each other, and ignoring the multitudes who are out there starving and dying and going to hell because no one has ever taken them even a verse of the Bible, much less the gospel. I want to point out one last thing, and that is the disciples then took up the bonus. Verse 37. And they did all eat and were filled. And that's the people that just ate. And I want to point out that back then there was such poverty in Judea and Galilee, all of Israel, so much poverty under the Roman Empire that this may have been the first time any of them had ever been filled. Most people were just hungry. And yet Jesus not only gave them enough to sustain them, He fed them until they were filled. Isn't that amazing? That's what the Lord does with us, doesn't He? He doesn't just give us a sustenance diet. He fills us. And it says, they took up with the broken meat that was left 7 baskets full. So they went back and now I'm taking my bread back. See, give me all your bread back. So they're taking the bread back and pass it to me. So they're taking up the leftovers and being very careful with it and take all the bread back. And once they gathered it all together, they started out with just a couple of little loaves and a few fishes. And now they have all of this. 7 baskets of leftovers that are still edible. Amen. And so that's just a bonus that was given to the disciples who started out with so little. They've worked up a big appetite. Now they have baskets for themselves. You see, the truth is that you can't outgive God. You just can't outgive the Lord. He always gives back more to us than we give to Him. If you use a little a cup, And you give Him a cup full of whatever. He takes it and packs it down, shakes it, pushes it in until it's running over. Then He gives it back. If you use a big carafe, you get that shaken down, pressed down, shaken together, running over. If you use a dump truck, guess what you're going to get back? You're going to get what a dump truck would have when it's pressed down, shaken together, running over. There was a wealthy Christian. I forgot his name now. I don't want to say the wrong name, but maybe it was J.C. Penney, but not the store, but the man. James Cash Penney was a devoted Christian and even had his stores closed on Sunday and even pulled the curtain so you couldn't window shop. But he or some other millionaire Christian said that I just shovel it to the Lord and He shovels it back and He's got a bigger shovel. So I give and He gives back. But I want to say this, that giving to missions is not a get-rich scheme. And getting to give back is not the highest motive for giving. And I always want us to grow in grace so that we're working on the aiming for the higher motives. When I was a young person, the preachers would preach about getting back, and that sounds great. I want to get involved. I want to see what I get back from the Lord in my giving. But I've come to, as I've grown, to realize that it's much more important, not that what I give back, but the purpose for which I'm giving, to honor Christ and for souls to be saved. It's about the compassion of Christ and entering into His work. The seven baskets is a bonus and a blessing divided among the 12, but, you know, we should be involved whether we can, you know, I'm saved. I should be involved in this whether He gives me back anything or not. You know what I'm saying? That I have received the bread of life. Why wouldn't I want to be involved even if there is no bonus at the end? The bonus is just a bonus. But it's not a... I don't have to have that. I know folks who... Well, backstep off that for a second. But when I look back at my own missions giving, I've been giving to missions since I was 16. I don't remember what I started giving. I mean, amount-wise, I was making like $4 an hour. Couldn't have been very much. And I've been giving all my life. There's never been a year since then. 27 years, if my math is right. But I haven't been involved in missions. But I have no idea. I cannot give you empirical data on what I have given to the Lord or what I have gotten back. I have no idea. I give. I don't think about it. I don't total it up. I didn't even look at my giving report this year. Mrs. Raspberry takes it. She files it away. And I have no idea. I just know that it's accurate and what's promised in my tithe. I do know this. I do believe that God has given me far more than I've ever given to Him. I do believe that. And if God gave me nothing back, I still owe Him everything. But having said that, it's a joy to know that I have a God who loves me that much and wants to give a bonus and a blessing when we obey Him. And you see, when we start talking about faith, promise, giving, people say, well, how will I survive? How will I give up this or that? And then you realize that God has promised to give back to you and things just somehow work out. Things just somehow work out. That's called living by faith. It's not just about getting, it's about getting the job done. That's what Christians need to be concerned about. But here we have a model missions process. You have compassion. That's the beginning. Christ has compassion on a lost world. He took, He thanked, He broke, He gave to His disciples. His disciples gave to the multitude. And then He gave them a seven basket bonus. Now all of those people now are dead and gone. Hopefully they're all in heaven. If they were saved, they are in heaven. But the need is still great today. God needs someone to give up their lunch. God needs someone to give their life. God needs all of us to be involved. I can't do what He can do. I can't heal the blind, the deaf, the maimed, or the dumb, but I can carry bread. I can do that. You say, preacher, I can't preach and teach something. No, but you can do your job and you earn your paycheck and then you give towards missions and you suddenly find yourself involved in the greatest work in the world by being involved in God's work of saving souls and sharing the gospel, spreading the gospel. God needs some to give their lunch. God needs some to give their lives. And the call needs to go out today.